your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstand Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
I'm sure we've all been in a situation where we just disagree with what someone else is saying. Folks arguing about whether we should or shouldn't be in Iraq. Fans debating the referee's call as right or wrong. The tension of the Coke versus Pepsi debate. But it seems to me as though healthy discussion and debate has transformed into distrust and disdain. And the biggest concern from this is lack of progress. In today's American society, we are advancing at a snail's pace. Sure, if you count marketing the new flavor of Doritos as a great advance, or the creation of the beer 20-pack to go with the 12, 18, and 24 packs as a milestone, then our culture may be at its peak. But if you want true leadership and real decision-making, then you probably live with a heavy heart. Look at the Virginia General Assembly. For two consecutive budgetary sessions, they have been unable to resolve their differences until well after the original deadline had turned into one of impending screech halt. And we are in the midst of making it three in a row. In the world of the 44-ounce super big gulp, there is no such thing as moderation. Each representative sees the world in their own way and cannot be bothered to imagine that of another. Sides are taken and cemented in. No one talks about finding a common ground. There is just that dislike of the others. This feels like nothing more than the stereotypical boy at the park taking his ball home, doing nothing unless all of his demands are met. But the General Assembly has a much greater effect on others when they decide to go home because they can't compromise. Others suffer when state politicians pack up without discussion. Cities and counties throughout Virginia need to determine their own budgets. But not knowing what amounts are coming from the state for various projects and categories only make each area's own financial decisions more difficult, because state representatives would rather sit at home than compromise. But it's not just the Virginia Assembly. Our national politicians and citizens are much the same. We have Republicans and Democrats, conservatives and liberals who always seem to disagree. But where are our moderates? Currently, one side forces a new law or plan down the throat of the other after the other side has wasted time for as long as possible. But there is little true discussion. One group decides without accepting any input, and those left out of the discussion behave like a younger sibling, locking the door, hiding the keys, or some other disrupting factor that just postpones the inevitable. Our current behavior has led us to rebuild the sign tracking the current budgetary deficit, adding another number onto the odometer as we roll into the trillions. Moderates will probably not always be right, but at least we could keep a somewhat consistent path. The way things work currently, we spend 8 or 12 years being led fairly right or left by one party and then undo much of that when the other party takes over for their 8 to 12 years. In the meantime, we have dropped far down the list of countries actually progressing. Some countries have cell phones that work underground, and others are becoming entirely energy independent. When might the world's greatest country be able to do this? Possibly after we stop fighting and begin working together. Set aside the super big gulps and the rice crackers, and let's see if we can find moderate thinking for the future.
Princess, honest people, and all the pretty people, they all drinking, thinking that they got it made. better take your diamond ring. You better pawn it, babe. You used to be so amused at Napoleon in rags.
A little too much listening to Pat and Mark yesterday with the Dead Show. The Bob Dylan thing got in my head. All right, boys and girls. We keep continuing on. It's the 9th of April. Easter's coming up soon. Did everybody know that? And you should have already set your clock ahead, so after last week. All right, let's introduce today's topic. We're going to talk about the living wage in general and the living wage campaign at UVA with a couple representatives from the group. Who's on which microphone? We have Teresa Daniels.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Kevin, I know I'm going to blow this. Kevin Simowitz.
Kevin Simowitz, that's it.
All right, we got to fire that up a little bit. Catherine. All right, one more time. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Rick. Thanks a lot for having me on the show.
Well, I appreciate you coming here. Catherine, we can go up just a touch more so I don't have to play on the pot so much. I appreciate both of you coming in. Did anybody have to get up extra early, or do you both normally sleep in on Sundays?
No, I was wide awake. This is a good time for us.
This is a good time for you.
Teresa and I were worried. We thought it was 7 o'clock at first, 7 o'clock in the morning. That would have been a stretch.
Yeah.
This is good.
Someone else would have been hosting this program for a long time if that were the case. All right. I do want to thank you both for coming in. We're going to jump right into the topic at hand. The Living Wage Campaign at UVA, what is the mission, the goal for those? I think because I set it out in the lobby, I think a lot of people read the headline, they read the first paragraph on a story, so they probably know that, oh, yeah, yeah, they want to get the, they want to have the people at UVA make more money.
Right.
But there's more to it than that, right?
Right. Well, what our main goal is, we want 1072 for all UVA direct and contract employees, and we want that number to be indexed. So that every year, as inflation goes up, so do the employees' wages.
Now, what 1072? But what is everybody making now?
People are making obviously a wide range of different salaries. There, the university just increased their lowest pay band by 49 cents while we were on spring break to put it somewhere in the $9.30 or $9.40 range. The number $10.72 comes from a report by the Economic Policy Institute, the EPI, who do independent contracting in localities to determine what it costs to live there. That's why it's called a living wage. They factor in 7 different issues to find out how much it costs a person to live in a given city. The cost to live in the city of Charlottesville is $10.72. Anyone making less than $10.72 in the city isn't able to afford some basic necessities like housing, food, or childcare.
So in Charlottesville, it's $10.72, but in Richmond or Chapel Hill or, you know, Atlanta, it might be quite a different wage, either higher or lower.
That's right. That's right. It's calculated for a locality.
All right. How did the campaign come about? Who organized it? When was it organized? Because my memory, you know, I've done this topic, but it's been, I don't know, 5 years ago. And it seems to me that at the time, the goal was $8 an hour.
Right. That's right. There was an $8 campaign at the university a few years back. The Living Wage campaign has actually been going on at UVA somewhere between 8 and 10 years. And it just got started again this past fall. There were a group of students who got together around the issue after a Living Wage Action Week. We had some speakers come down from Georgetown University, where they won a living wage last year, and talk to us about what it means to pay people poverty wages as opposed to a living wage. And a group of students gathered around the issue in the fall and released a report this February detailing the university's policies and how they need to change.
All right, so you're requesting, demanding 1072. Which phrase would you use?
We're demanding it.
Okay. Because I think you get, Catherine, we need some headphone check. I think you got 1072, And I think requesting it and demanding it may be met differently. So I want to get that out there. Let's play the semantics game here for a minute. Have your requests or has your demand been met in any way? You know, because you, Kevin, you already said that the wage went up somewhat over spring break. So for those of our listeners who don't pay that much attention to university, that was mid-March.
Right. So I think the increase in the wages is kind of like a sign from the administration saying that, you know, this is on their minds and they are thinking about it, and that we do have a future in getting a living wage.
And it's a great step towards 1072, but it's not a replacement for 1072. And that we calculated, and the EPI calculated, a living wage at $10.72. And anything less than that is simply unacceptable, because anything less than that is a poverty wage. It means that you're not making it in Charlottesville. And the university has a greater responsibility to the community to make sure the people that work at UVA and that clean the floors and work in the dining halls are able to live in the same city in which they work.
What was the wage before it went up to, what is it now,
I believe it's $9.37 right now. It rose from $8.88. That was the lowest pay mark for full-time direct employees. So that didn't include part-time workers. It didn't include students. And most notably, it didn't include contracted workers like the Aramark workers who work in the dining halls at UVA.
Yeah, that was something on my list, and I'll just pop that in here now, is if you're a student and you drive a UTS bus or you work in library, do you make more than some of the other people we've mentioned, some of the people who are the folks who clean the dormitory rooms, et cetera, like that? Oh, my God, when I was there, they really should have paid them more to clean the dormitory rooms.
It's tough to know how much the Aramark workers make because their salaries aren't released since they're a private contractor. In terms of students making wages, students are actually ridiculously underpaid on the assumption that every student works to have a little extra money on the side. But a lot of the students who are employed by the university are working to put themselves through school, and they're facing many of the same challenges that other people are in terms of living and working in the city of Charlottesville. But there are part-time employees, clearly, who are making, part-time employees who aren't student employees, who are making money in the same wage level that the students are. So there's just a tremendous disconnect between how the university decides to pay people and what people need to live, or what people need to live in the city of Charlottesville.
I'm curious, I don't know whether, how up in the air it was planned. I doubt it had anything to do with you two being on today's program. But Friday, you were outside of the Board of Visitors,
right?
Making a protest,
right? The Board of Visitors is having one of their biannual meetings, and we saw it as a really great time for us to show the student support and the want and desire for a living wage. So we organized a rally on Friday, and a good number of students came out and let them know that there is a lot of student support for this.
Can I ask, and I hope to get an honest answer, what is a good number of students? Because what's the number of students here at the university now? And let's, you know, in a general number, is it 16? Have we gotten to 16,000 counting graduate students yet?
I think with grad students, it's somewhere between 16 and 18, I think.
So even if you only are looking for 1%, we're still talking about 1,500 to 2,000 students showing up for a meeting, right? Is that 1% of, I don't
maybe
have my calculator with
students?
Me. No. Is that how lame it is? How bad my math is now that I've moved on?
I don't know. I'm working on an American studies degree.
Maybe Catherine can find the calculator out there. Please don't call up and tell me how bad my math is. How many people showed up?
We had maybe about 100 students.
Somewhere between 100 and 120 students at the rally.
All right. So now that I have not talking while I'm doing the math, I can't multitask, that is close to, you're approaching 1%.
Right.
Is that a satisfactory number?
Well, for the amount of organizational effort that went into the rally, I think it's a pretty good number.
When you say satisfactory in terms of number of people to come out for a rally?
Well, I'm just curious, how was your protest met by the Board of Visitors?
They stayed inside the rotunda, and they didn't come out to speak with us. I got the chance to go to their meeting the next morning, and Teresa and I had actually gone to their first meeting on Thursday morning, because the rally wasn't meant to be one single event where we tried to put a lot of pressure on the Board of Visitors. We wanted to go to the Board of Visitors as many times as we could while they were here in Charlottesville and let them know that students did support this issue and that it wasn't one or two people, that there was a large movement, not just within the student population, but within the community and increasingly within Virginia as a whole, that the living wage at UVA is an important issue. And they employ President John Casteen. So the 16 BOV members pay his salary, and they pay him a living wage. They pay him actually somewhere around 34 living wages if you start to multiply it out. And he's unwilling to pay his workers a living wage.
So John Casteen, President Casteen, sets the wage for everyone that we've been talking about.
John Casteen's the president of the university, so he is ultimately responsible for the wages that he pays his employees, and he's also the bottom line person who's responsible for the people with whom the university contracts.
All right, 11:18 here on the Wake Up Call on the 9th of April, talking about the living wage in general, the living wage campaign at University of Virginia, with Representatives Teresa Daniels and Kevin Simowitz. Fire it up. Phone number is 979-0919. If you're out of town a little bit, 1-877-967-6762. That's 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. The toll-free number, 979-0919, is the local number. Catherine is out front, patching you through. Now, this is not an issue that just affects the Charlottesville area, right? I mean, there are other schools here in the state that have similar problems?
Well, Mary Washington had a living wage campaign the past year, and they were successful in getting a living wage out in Stanton, Virginia.
How about some of the other large schools in the state, like William & Mary, Virginia Tech?
I'm not sure if there's been any movement on the issue at Virginia Tech. There has been movement in the past on the issue at William & Mary. I'm not sure where they are now. This would be a great chance for the University of Virginia to step into the leadership role that it often touts itself in and really be a leader in its field. There are other comparable universities across the country that have taken on this issue. Georgetown most notably won a living wage last year.
All right, let's take our first call. We got Steve from Charlottesville. Hey, Steve.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing well, man. What you bringing to the table?
Just wanted to disagree with the whole living wage premise. I'm a local guy, born and raised. I'm a nurse. Don't make that much, but I'm okay. It's just, I don't see the incentive for anyone to further themselves if you set such a low standard to get by. I mean, if you don't have marketable skills that allow you to make 1072 and above, what incentive is there to prosper? What incentive is there to move further up the ladder with a living wage?
All right, Steve, I've got some questions on that later on, but we'll let Teresa and Kevin reply to that. Thanks for calling, man.
Sure, thanks.
Sure, thanks for calling, Steve. In terms of incentive to work harder, incentive to have marketable skills, it's not a matter of incentive or of giving a handout to people who are getting something that they don't deserve. The whole idea of the living wage is that if you work a full-time job for the University of Virginia, if you're employed 40 hours a week, that you would make enough to live on. So it's not a matter of giving people something that isn't rightfully theirs or something that they don't deserve. It's the idea that people who work deserve to work one full-time job and not two full-time jobs like many university employees. A 40-hour work week should allow for you to provide for yourself and for your family.
All right, 1121, dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. They want to tell you the markets of Tiger Fuel forcast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Sunny today, highs 55 to 60, clear tonight, lows 30 to 35. Sunny tomorrow, highs 60 to 65. Partly cloudy in the valley and 46. Clear in Lynchburg, Richmond, and Charlottesville, where it's 47. Down south, 44 east in Richmond, 48 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, we want to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their help today. They are now featuring state-of-the-art travel gear from Eagle Creek. And if your travel gear is taking you somewhere warm, Blue Ridge has sandals from Reef and others, shorts from the North Face, and warm weather pants and shirts. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center, Charlottesville, the Mountain Inn at Wintergreen, and at BRMS.com. And we also want to congratulate two more big grand prize winners from the just-completed fun drive. Joe Watts of Brightwood won the Nikon digital camera from Crutchfield, and Melissa Lewis from Buckingham got the $500 shopping spree from Seville Bike and Tri. Be listening Monday afternoon at 5 when we draw for the second of the two weekend stays at the Hampton Inn and Suites University, the Summer 06 Family Membership at Fry Springs Beach Club, and the complete desktop computer system from PC Pro. Thanks again to everyone who helped us reach our best pledge total ever, especially those who pledged during my program. Thank you very much. All right, back to the topic at hand. Living wage campaign here at the University of Virginia. Teresa Daniels, Kevin Simowitz. Kevin is also afraid I'm going to blow that pronunciation. He keeps giving me the thumbs up now that I actually got it right two times in a row.
I'm really excited.
Well, and just know that the guarantee is I will still screw it up at least one more time during the hour. Name pronunciation, not my specialty. All right, how many people are we talking about raising the wage for? And again, I guess you can't talk about, are you including folks who work for Aramark and other groups?
Yeah, we are trying to include those folks. And it's hard to tell how many employees this is going to affect because we aren't allowed, we don't know how many employees aren't making a living wage that work for Aramark and ServiceMaster and all those contracted companies.
The figure that I have in front of me is in late December of 2005, there are 338 full-time salaried employees below the living wage.
Good
and,
Lord.
And 523 full-time salaried employees in the UVA Medical Center below the living wage. Now, that doesn't include our part-time workers, and it doesn't include the Aramark workers, almost all of whom we believe through conversations are making below a living wage.
So you're a salaried person and you can't even make what's living wage, $16,000 something?
Right, so it's not an extraordinary amount of money that's being asked for, and it's not that we're asking the university to bend over backwards and do something that's never been done anywhere.
That's crap if you can't make, if you gotta work salary and you can't make a living wage. It's generally the salary people are the ones who are the most taken advantage of in terms of, when you come, when you go, how much time you gotta put in. How much money are we talking about reallocated funds? You know, the university has to come up with X number of dollars to actually pay these people what they need to.
That's a really important question. Since we filed a Freedom of Information Act that hasn't been met in full by the university, the best that we can do is have a wise estimate. And our wise estimate is somewhere around $3 to $5 million to raise this. And $3 million is, working off last year's budget, is 0.27% of the annual budget. So it's about a quarter of 1% of the annual budget. That's how much it would take for us to raise everyone below the living wage up to an index living wage of $10.72 an hour.
Now, you also had a recent meeting with university administrators, correct? Sometime in the
That's
last
correct.
Week or two?
Right.
All right, well, hold on. I'll take this call. is you can't let the callers fall aside. Rusty from Culpeper, what's up? Rusty, are you there? Whoops, maybe I should do this and push this button. Hey, Rusty.
Hey, Rick.
It's you know, this is a very complicated piece of equipment back here, and if you don't push all the right buttons, you just don't hear what you want to hear. What you got? What are you talking about today?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you just fine.
All right, sorry. I kind of agree with them. You know, I believe if you work, you should get paid, but not really taking science but sides. But what does Mr. Castine have to do? Can he just, like, snap his finger and make it all better again, or does he have a lot of state litigation to go through since it's kind of a state organization? You know, what can be done to solve the matter for these people?
Ah, wonderful question. You are direct and to the point, my man. So what happens? Can Mr. Castine just snap his fingers, like Rusty says, and problem solved?
Rusty, that's a great question. Mr. Castine has made it very clear multiple times that the problem in his mind is not with him, it's with the General Assembly or with the Board of Visitors. The problem, though, is that President Castine says that it's not an issue he raises, it's an issue the Board of Visitors needs to raise. And I sat at the Board of Visitors Thursday morning and listened to them say that they don't make decisions like that, that they take the cues of the administration. So the administration doesn't make any decisions at UVA, and the Board of Visitors doesn't make any decisions at UVA, and it's left to the students to start making some decisions there. So the bottom line is that if President Castine wants to pay all of his employees a living wage, it gets done. He can make it happen. The city of Charlottesville, in fact, they pay everyone a living wage. So it's not unprecedented in the state, and it can be done.
All right, dial us up. Catherine's out there looking to patch you through. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, as we talk about the living wage campaign in general and specifically at the University of Virginia with Teresa Daniels, Kevin Simowitz. So what's going on in Charlottesville, the city? You brought that up. So right here locally, that can be done, and can be done in a manner that works for everyone?
That's right. The city pays their employees a living wage, and they only contract with people who pay a living wage. It's of note, though, that the city's living wage calculation is not $10.72. They have an index living wage that they calculated independently, and it's a different figure than the EPI's figure. Theirs was calculated when they began to use living wage, which I believe 3 to 5 years ago, but it's only my second year in Charlottesville, so somebody might want to call in and correct me on that.
All right. Let's jump back to your recent meeting with university administrators. Friday you had your rally outside of the Board of Visitors. When was this meeting with the administrators?
This was last Thursday.
Okay. Who was in the meeting?
Four members from our campaign, Carmen Comstey, Zach Fields,
Ben Van Dyne, and Abby Bellows were there, as well as President Castine, Leonard Sandridge, and their chief financial officer, whose name I do not know, Ms. Reynolds, I believe.
Was it successful? I mean, did you walk out feeling as though, all right, you know, he didn't, as Rusty put it in a perfect manner, they didn't snap their fingers and make it happen, but we're moving forward.
Yeah, I think that the students who met with him left there knowing that our campaign really needed to move forward, and that we needed to stay on the administration and not let down all of our efforts that we've made so far.
It was a really disappointing day for the campaign, because we'd been in email contact with President Castine and with Mr. Sandridge leading up to it. We'd laid a lot of groundwork. We've written an incredibly thorough report that we presented to the administration. We worked with them to do research. We crunched numbers. We came to the meeting hoping that there was going to be open and honest dialogue. And the four members of our campaign walked in and walked out without any sort of give or any sort of dialogue on the administration's part. The administration was unable to agree that paying a living wage was even a necessary moral issue, and they spoke entirely of their perceived inability to pay a living wage and their reliance upon what they continually referred to as market wages, which if you look at who employs whom in the city of Charlottesville, for the university to talk about an external market is a simply ridiculous statement. The university is the market in Charlottesville.
You bring up the phrase moral issue. Is it a moral issue? I mean, is that the foundation on which you're building the argument?
Absolutely. I think really at the heart of the issue, it is based on morals, and we see that living wage is more than anything, it's a human right, and that if the university is employing all these people who are living in poverty, that it's dehumanizing them. And
I would just say there's plenty of good sound economic arguments behind it, and there's plenty of good logical reasoning behind it. But at the basis of it, it's exactly what Teresa said, that worker rights are human rights, and that if you work full-time for the University of Virginia, or if you're employed by the University of Virginia, you shouldn't have to make choices about whether or not you're going to buy birthday presents for your kids, or whether or not you're going to put food on the table that week. We're just asking that those questions not be questions that university employees have to raise. So inherently, it is a moral issue, and when you drastically underpay people with the intention of saving yourself a few dollars, that becomes a real moral problem. And the students of the university are rallying behind that issue and urging people in the community to really get behind the issue as well and pressure the administration to do the right thing.
I'd love to have some callers ring us up and get into the moral issue topic. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. I do need to take this moment and thank Five Guys Burgers and Fries for their support here today. It's Evil Reader's Choice for Burgers. Five Guys serves America's standard, fresh and handmade, from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and open until 10 Fridays and Saturdays. Five Guys Burgers and Fries is behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center and now open in the Hollymead Town Center as well, and coming soon to the Downtown Mall. Charlottesville, 975 Guys.
If there's people out there who want to talk about the living wage, I'm usually at that Five Guys two or three times a week. It's a good place to find me if you want to keep the debate going.
We'll give them an extra plug during the hour here. Catherine is taking a call right now. It is 11:33 on the wake-up call as we discuss the living wage campaign at the University of Virginia with Representatives Teresa Daniels and Kevin Simowitz. All right, we've got Hank in his car phone. Hey, Hank.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man.
I got a question. I know that the students are the ones that are pressing for the living wage, but are the students the one willing to kick in an extra $2,000 or $3,000 a year in their tuition, or are their parents willing to do that for them in order to make up some of the shortfall?
All right, good question. Thanks, Hank. Keep listening.
Well, what we believe is that the university can well afford to pay its workers a living wage. The university's endowment is $2.2 billion, and its annual budget is off the interest of that endowment, and the small increase in the annual budget that would be brought by offering a living wage to all the employees, I feel like that would not come out of the pockets of the students.
Yeah, but Teresa, if anybody out there, either the two of you or anybody listening, has ever waited tables or been a bartender, we all know that the people with all the money are the crappiest tippers in town. So you can't expect the university, if they have a lot of money, which you're claiming that they do, is actually going to spend it on somebody who needs it.
Well, that's part of the moral imperative of this. First, Hank, that's a great question. And tuition rises each year anyway. So the university has continually come back, at least at the beginning, they came back with the idea that tuition would have to rise even more each year for this to become a plausible option. They would have to take money from places that they don't want to take money. But when it comes down to it, the university on Friday in their paper just announced the plans for the South Lawn Project, which is set to revamp part of the South Lawn for $108 million. $108 million is that figure. And when you start looking at the money that the university has, it's not an issue of, will students chip in $2,000 or $3,000 a year to pay these increased salaries? It's an issue of, will the university do the right thing and the moral thing and the economically sound thing and prioritize the money they have and take care of people before they take care of buildings?
All right, we got Larry on his car phone. Let's see how Larry's holding up. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Good, man. What you got?
This is hilarious to me. What are the voices of the poor people who are working at the university? You know, you got to talk about students need to get involved in the community and everything, but are the people who are being victimized, are they speaking up for themselves, or are these people just, you know, assuming that they represent this population? Thank you.
Good question.
Well, there's a huge culture of fear that's brought about by the university, and these people who are making poverty wages definitely fear in losing their jobs when they speak out about the poor working conditions that the university provides.
Larry, I think you've hit the nail right on the head in terms of this being an issue of workers. And Teresa brings up a good point that a lot of the workforce that we're in personal one-to-one relationships with there does feel an extreme amount of fear because of the way the university handles and bullies their employees. So they're not in a position, they don't feel that they're in a position where they can speak out publicly, where they can come on NRN's morning show and share about what it's like for them because they're 2 weeks away from losing their job at this point. However, it can't just be students, because if it's just students, you fall into that reaching down and trying to help someone out scenario, and that doesn't work out at all. So this is a solidarity movement. Students and workers are bound together in this because this issue affects both students and workers. It affects our entire community, and our collective fate is kind of bound up with one another. So we do the things that we can do. As students, we have a voice. We're able to come on a morning radio show and be protected and speak out on the issues that they're not able to. Meanwhile, the university employees continue to make our university go. They continue to do the hard work and the special work that we're not able to do day to day, and that together we work closer towards fair pay and fair representation for all university employees.
And I will remind Larry, I don't know that it's specifically related, but the individual who put all her effort into getting the university union out there is now no longer a university employee after quite some time. 11:38 here on the Wake Up Call. As we talk about the living wage campaign, dial us up. For or against? Where's the moral issue involved? Teresa Daniels, Kevin Simowitz.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, it's the health and fitness issue. The Hook checks out how to pick out the perfect pair of shoes, interviews a few local racers, and even prints the official marathon and half marathon course maps. Get the scoop on Corn Capshaw's latest project, 9 stories of downtown retail and residential use. And is it true that Virginia's Mark Warner is Hillary Clinton's biggest challenge for the 2008 Democratic presidential nomination? The Hook, spectacular views, premier location. And we want to thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support today. Blue Ridge Graphics at the corner of Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. All right, dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Lots of questions and comments on today's topic about the living wage campaign at UVA. Teresa and Kevin are here to chat about it. Well, fire back. They have no problems with that. And let me turn their microphones back on so they can actually talk back about any phone calls. I think we've had a lot of interesting questions and comments from Rusty and Steve and Hank and Larry. You can add to the program today. We sort of gotten near the question at hand that I have, which is, Kevin, I believe you said that the university sets the marketplace here in the Charlottesville area. So what would happen to the rest of the marketplace if the university took their minimum wage up to $10.72? And because there are so many other places in town, are you going to go, you know, if that were to happen and everybody raised their hands and cheered, or most people did anyway. Is there a group that's going to start up and go to Starbucks, Harris Teeter, Pizza Hut, and start telling them that they need to raise their minimum wage as well? Because now you've got a large number of people at the university being paid $3 more than everybody else in town is making?
It's a really important question, obviously, and it's something that comes up a lot in terms of how raising the floor on the university's pay rate would impact the rest of the Charlottesville community. And it's often perceived from an economic point of view that doing this would be tragic for everyone else in the area, and that no other business would be able to survive, and the town as we know it would collapse inward on itself, all because of the living wage campaign at UVA. But when you start to break down the case scenarios and the case studies in other places where this has happened, so other schools and other localities that now use a living wage to determine how much people are going to be paid, it's just simply not true. So there's a gap between the economic argument that functions in an ideal world and then what actually happens. What's actually happened in places that pay their workers a living wage is that the workers make more money. And that's the one direct effect of paying people living wage. Workers make more money, and then consequently more money goes into the economy, and the local economy functions better than it has before. And that creates a cyclical effect where more money continues to stay in that economy, and housing becomes affordable for people as they make enough money to buy a house in the city. So it's not an issue of the university all of a sudden forcing other people to go out of business, which I think is the implicit suggestion when you make this argument, but that the university does the right thing and that the rest of the city would follow. The university, as the largest employer in the area, has a responsibility to take the lead in setting what the market rate should be, and the market rate, the university is the market rate. So the university's pay rate or the market rate can't be below what it costs to live in the city. This is what means that this is a major cause of the fact that 1 in 4 people in the city of Charlottesville live in poverty. We don't think about that when we think about Charlottesville as the number one city in the U.S., but there's a big gap between the people who celebrate Charlottesville as the number one city in the United States and then the people who clean the university day in and day out.
All right, dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Teresa, is this something that you feel that the organization needs to be concerned about? Is moving on to other businesses here in town and effectively, I mean, if a university has $2 billion endowment and they can afford to pay people by, you know, moving this 0.25% from there to here, what about an organization, a business that, you know, where the owner only takes home $50,000 a year, but is paying his half dozen employees $7 an hour?
Well, I really do think that the university, as you know, as such a huge employer and as having so much money, it should be able to provide for its workers. And maybe a business like that is going to have to, you know, be more conscious about what it pays its workers. But the university paying poverty wages, its policies are really reflected in the amount of poverty, 25%. In Charlottesville, 25% of the population of Charlottesville is living in poverty. And I think that is a huge reflection of the size of the university's effect on this.
I'm looking at the, as I play with some papers over here, I see that Aramark is an underwriter here at WNRN, and it makes me wonder if anybody's listening and what the hell they're thinking about all this chatter.
You know, Rick, I just wanted to tag your last question and say that my involvement in the living wage campaign, my personal interest in the living wage campaign, came last year when I was a first year at the university and volunteering with the Salvation Army on a regular basis and talking with people who were working in after-school daycare programs for children. And it started to sink in with me that the people in the city who couldn't afford housing were almost entirely employees of the university. And that's where this argument comes in. My personal target is the university because I'm a university student. and I represent myself as such. I tell people I go to the University of Virginia, and my problem comes in that the university embarrasses me constantly, and they let me down every time they pay people poverty wages, and they do that week in and week out when they write people paychecks for under $10.72 an hour, and when they contract with people who pay less than $10.72 an hour. So our particular focus on the university is mainly because we're university students. They represent us, we represent them, but they're just doing a big thing very badly.
So what's the next step for the group? I mean, you've had a meeting recently with some key administrators, and if I took your responses correctly, you went in hoping to have one thing happen, and you came out sort of not depressed or disgusted, but unhappy with the way the meeting went or ended. You had your rally at the Board of Visitors meeting. And, Kevin, you said you got to meet with the Board of Visitors the next day, but during the meeting itself, no one came out. And effectively, it seems like everyone's pointing the finger at someone else as it's their job. No, it's their job. So what's the next step? I mean, how do you actually get someone to step up, take responsibility, and do something?
We're going to continue to pressure President John Castine because at the end of the day, this is his responsibility. He's the president of the university. He makes these type of decisions. He's in a position of power. So one thing that we're asking people to do is to email and call President Castine. And, Rick, if his email address is in the public domain, can I share it?
Oh, always, man. I give people's license plate numbers when they piss me off on Route 29.
That's fantastic. Well, you can email President Castine at jtc@virginia.edu. It's jtc@virginia.edu. Let him know that you're interested in making sure the university, they ensure the health and the well-being of all their employees and their entire workforce. So that's a big next step for us, is making sure that President Castine understands that it's not 12 students who feel like this is an issue. It's the UVA community and the Charlottesville community as well.
All right, let's take this call real quick, Teresa, because I got a guy from San Francisco on the line. David?
Yeah, morning.
Hey, good morning. I'm assuming that we're not powerful enough to reach all that way yet, that you're listening online.
Well, I have to hang my computer upside down from the ceiling in order to get the reception right, but it's working.
Oh, great. And how are you going to add to today's topic?
Well, a couple of years ago, probably almost 5 years ago, San Francisco voted itself a living wage. And I was involved in the preliminaries of it. And when I took economics back in 88, we were calculating what an honest minimum wage would need to be, and we were coming from just the base point of February of 1968, which was the minimum wage at that point was kicked in at $1.60. And so we calculated there were about eight different factors that we looked at in order to cross-check, and an easy way to do it would be how many hours would it take to be able to buy an ounce of gold? And then in current wages, what would it take, how many hours would it take to buy an ounce of gold? You could also cross-check it in purchasing power, $100 in 1968 money, what would it buy? How much would it take to buy the same goods and services in current dollars? And so in 1988, the minimum wage, as calculated, should have been $17.50. I think it was $17.48 in 1988 dollars. So I'm, looking at the way inflation has gone, obviously out here in San Francisco, we've got a whole different problem because we had Silicon Valley and the dot-com bubble. It's brought the price of a house up here so that something like $600,000 or $800,000 for a house, which is just crazy for a postage stamp and whatnot. But still, in all, I'm thinking that the minimum wage is probably closer to it needs to be probably closer to about $45 an hour. So when you're talking about $10 or $11 an hour, you're still you know, at 25% of what it needs to be. And, you know, I realize that, you know, if you look throughout history, you hear about in pre-World War II Germany, their people were pushing wheelbarrows full of money around in order to buy a loaf of bread. I have a postage stamp collection that shows that you had to have 2 billion Deutschmarks in order to send a stamp across town, or a letter across town. So, you know, obviously $50 an hour, $45 an hour seems sort of crazy money, but that's the reality. That's why nobody's able to have car insurance anymore. That's why no one has health care anymore. That's why, you know, in some ways the social problems where the kids are not respecting their parents, the kids think that their parents are poor and they think that there's something the matter with their parents. Is they're poor, and there's this complete lack of respect in this way because they think that their parents are some sorts of losers. There are hundreds of different social problems that are coming up because the idea that the average citizen is not able to it's as if you got into a poker game, you realize that someone's cheating, and you still stay in the game. You know, there's this idea that we're born into this poker game, we're born into this Monopoly board, and rather than standing up and saying, I'm not going to play with this stack deck or this cheating game, people just, you know, put the blinders on and keep going. And so this, the idea of what it honestly takes to survive in this world and be able to move forward. You know, one of the big con jobs that goes with this is the anti-union movement.
All right, David, you need to finish up, man.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you're hogging
the
phone.
Anti-union movement as well, the idea that people band together. United you stand, divided you fall. People band together, they get honest numbers, and they work together to make sure those honest numbers happen. You know, this idea that, you know, neocon radio, Rush Limbaugh and whatnot are trying to tell us that we should not band together. They come up and tell us that united you fall, divided you stand. You know, the proud loner is the one that makes it, and that if you band together, you're some sort of a commie. So it's you know, their big lie is united you fall, divided you stand.
All right, David, man, you brought up a lot of key points. Let us get in and toss a few around here.
All right, no trouble.
And thanks for listening. San Francisco, although I don't know that wherever the math comes from, when you start talking about $45 an hour, now you are going to have people calling in and saying, oh, man, that's crazy. That will kill the economics locally. And I'm sure that while some of David's points are important, I would think that's not necessarily something that you guys want to attach to your campaign. What? Hold on.
I rarely have to field the argument that we have too low of a number, that our estimate is too conservative. I would agree that obviously the cost of living is just skyrocketing and it's harder and harder to make it. We feel really good about the numbers that we have in terms of an accurate calculation of what it costs to live and survive in the city of Charlottesville as kind of a median for different living situations and different family situations. So 1072 is a number that we're standing by and that we're messaging by because it's really important for the city of Charlottesville. But the point that it's increasing, that the money needs to increase each year, is essential. That's why we're asking that the living wage be indexed to inflation so that we have this campaign once and not year after year. So this point that it's going to cost more and more is a good one, but $45 for the city of Charlottesville seems a little extreme.
All right, 11:55 here on the wake-up call. As we get into our last few minutes, I want to take time and thank 45Fix. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting, to decks and siding, that's 45fix.com. Immediate, no obligation estimates available anytime. That's the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. And remember, you are listening to 91.9 WNRN Charlottesville and 89.9 WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. And while we're in our last few minutes, George Bell will be here at noon for Les Tips Purdue. If French isn't your thing, that means the time's gone by. And on WNRN, that means late 80s through mid-90s alternative. Tune in for it. That's Les Tims Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only on WNRN. All right, David's brought some interesting points, and I'm kind of cool to hear somebody from San Francisco calling in. But Teresa, I was trying to get from you, what is the next step? Because at this point, it just seems as though there are some newspaper articles, there's the rally, there's a meeting. But, you know, is the campaign starting to feel the pressure of not being successful yet?
Well, one thing that I think we're doing in the next week is I'll take this opportunity to plug our rally on Wednesday at 1 p.m. We're having a huge rally. We're having Julian Bond, president of the NAACP, come speak. And hopefully we're going to get some student groups to perform music. I think it's a really good way to show the student support and the student power and, you know, all the support behind this issue from the students. And it's going to be at the Rotunda, right on UVA grounds.
Do you feel that that something's going to happen soon? I mean, because, all right, it's been, I think it was in 96, that the goal was $8. And Kevin, I think you said it went to $8.80 somewhere between 1996 and March of 2006 when it went up to $9 and change. And so now your goal is to take it to $10.72. That's a lot of time. You know, I don't want to get into the economics and the strategies of the company that I work for. But there's a lot of companies in town that would, that certainly haven't gone that far, haven't raised their starting wage in this time period. The government hasn't raised their starting wage that much in this time period. And we're still talking about 8 years.
The university is $8.88 an hour before this most recent pay rate. When calculated against the $8 campaign, which wasn't indexed to inflation, meant that they were actually paying less than they were when they started to pay people $8. So it was $7 and change during this past spring when they were paying $8.88, but they hadn't indexed their $8 campaign to inflation. And in terms of how it relates to other people's success in raising minimum wages or in raising living wages, it's important to remember that we're asking the university to pay a living wage for people in Charlottesville, and that the university speaks oftentimes of their proud Jeffersonian tradition and being a leader in the field and a ton of fancy rhetoric that would be great if they were actually doing it. And this is a field that the university can lead in. They're so successful in academics and in athletics, depending on which sport you're following. And this is just one other way for them to take the lead in, I would argue, the most important of issues, the workers over the buildings.
All right. I want to thank both of you for coming on today. I think it was a very important topic. Doesn't matter whether you're for or against it for a lot of folks. I think it's a matter of discussion. And as I said to open the show, you can't just toss topics aside with disdain, although I'm all for it. All right. Well, thanks to Teresa Daniels, Kevin Simowitz.
Thanks for having us on this morning.
I appreciate it. Next week, by the way, Barbara Norton, best known as Fearless Consumer, from The Hook, will be back, and we're going to talk about the 20-year campaign of determining whether the missing UVA student Patrick Collins is dead, as she says, and it's a murder case, or whether the university police, who still have it written off as a someone who just left their current life. So Barbara will be back. Adios.
This- This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at WNRN.RLC.net. The wake-up call is produced by Catherine Greiner. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.